This is Audible.
Recorded Books Incorporated presents an unabridged recording of Catherine Called Birdie by Karen Cushman, narrated by Jenny Sterling.
September. 12th day of September. I am commanded to write an account of my days. I am bit by fleas and plagued by family. That is all there is to say. 13th day of September. My father must suffer from ale head this day, for he cracked me twice before dinner instead of once. I hope his angry liver bursts. 14th day of September. Tangled my spinning again. Corpus bones, what a torture. 15th day of September. Today the sun shone, and the villagers sowed hay, gathered apples, and pulled fish from the stream. I, trapped inside, spent 2 hours embroidering a cloth for the church, and 3 hours picking out my stitches after my mother saw it. I wish I were a villager. 16th day of September. Spinning. Tangled. 17th day of September. Untangled. 18th day of September. If my brother Edward thinks that writing this account of my days will help me grow less childish and more learned, he will have to write it. I will do this no longer, and I will not spin, and I will not eat. Less childish indeed. 19th day of September. I am delivered. My mother and I have made a bargain. I may forego spinning as long as I write this account for Edward. My mother is not much for writing, but has it in her heart to please Edward, especially now he is gone to be a monk. And I would do worse things to escape the foolish boredom of spinning. So I will write. What follows will be my book. The Book of Catherine, called Little Bird or Birdie, daughter of Rollo, and the Lady Iselin, sister to Thomas, Edward, and the abominable Robert, of the village of Stonebridge in the Shire of Lincoln, in the country of England, in the hands of God. Begun this 19th day of September, in the year of our Lord, 1290, the 14th year of my life. The skins are my father's, left over from the household accounts, and the ink also. The writing I learned of my brother Edward, but the words are my own. Picked off 29 fleas today. 20th day of September. Today I chased a rat about the hall with a broom and set the broom afire, ruined my embroidery, threw it in the privy, ate too much for dinner, hid in the barn and sulked, teased the littlest kitchen boy until he cried, turned the mattresses, took the linen outside for airing, hid from Morwena and her endless chores, ate supper, brought in the forgotten linen now wet with dew, endured scolding and slapping from Morwena, pinched Perkin, and went to bed. And having writ this, Edward, I feel no less childish or more learned than I was. 21st day of September. Something is astir. I can feel my father's eyes following me about the hall, regarding me as he would a new warhorse, or a bull bought for breeding. I am surprised that he has not asked to examine my hoofs. And he asks me questions, the beast who never speaks to me except with the flat of his hand to my cheek or my rump. This morning, exactly how old are you, daughter? This forenoon, have you all your teeth? Is your breath sweet or foul? Are you a good eater? What colour is your hair when it is clean? Before supper, how are your sewing and your bowels and your conversation? What is brewing here? Sometimes I miss my brothers, even the abominable Robert. With Robert and Thomas away in the king's service, and Edward at his abbey, there are fewer people about for my father to bother, so he mostly fixes upon me. 22nd day of September. I am a prisoner to my needle again today, hemming linen in the solar with my mother and her women. This chamber is pleasant, large and sunny, with my mother and father's big bed on one side, and on the other, a window that looks out on the world I could be enjoying were I not in here sewing. I can see across the yard, past the stables and privy and cowshed, to the river and the gatehouse, over the fields, to the village beyond. Cottages line the dusty road leading to the church at the far end. Dogs and geese and children tumble in play, while the villagers plough. Would I were tumbling, or even ploughing, with them. Here in my prison my mother works and gossips with her women, as if she didn't mind being chained to needle and spindle. My nurse Morwena, now that I am near grown, and not in need of her nursing, tortures me with complaints about the length of my stitches, and the colours of my silk, and the thumbprints on the altar cloth I am hemming. If I had to be born a lady, why not a rich lady? So someone else could do the work, and I could lie on a silken bed and listen to a beautiful minstrel sing while my servants hemmed. Instead, I am the daughter of a country knight with but 10 servants, 70 villagers, no minstrel, and acres of unhemmed linen. It grumbles my guts. I do not know what the sky is like today, or whether the berries have ripened. Has Perkins' best goat dropped her kid yet? Did Watt the farrier finally beat Sim at wrestling? I do not know. I am trapped here inside, hemming. Morwena says it is the altar cloth for me. Corpus bones. 23rd day of September. There was a hanging in Riverford today. I am being punished for impudence again, so was not allowed to go. I am near 14, and have never yet seen a hanging. My life is barren. 24th day of September. The stars and my family align to make my life black and miserable. My mother seeks to make me a fine lady, dumb, docile, and accomplished. So I must take lady lessons and keep my mouth closed. My brother Edward thinks even girls should not be ignorant, so he taught me to read holy books and to write, even though I would rather sit in an apple tree and wonder. Now my father, the toad, conspires to sell me like a cheese to some lackwit seeking a wife. What makes this clodpole suitor anxious to have me? I am no beauty, being sun-browned and grey-eyed, with poor eyesight and a stubborn disposition. My family holds but 2 small manors. We have plenty of cheese and apples, but no silver or jewels or boundless acres to attract a suitor. Corpus bones, he comes to dine with us in 2 days' time. I plan to cross my eyes and drool in my meat. 26th day of September. Master Lackwit comes today, despite my mother's objections. Although she is wed to a knight of no significance, her fathers were kings in Britain long ago, she says, and my suitor is but a wool merchant from Great Yarmouth, who aspires to be mayor, and thinks a wife with noble relations, no matter how distant, will be an advantage. My father bellowed. Sweet Judas, lady, think you we can eat your royal ancestors or plant your family name? The man stinks of gold. If he will have her and pay well for the privilege, your daughter will be a wife. When there is money involved, my father can be quite well spoken. The hour of Vespers, later this day. My suitor has come and gone. The day was grey and drippy, so I sat in the privy to watch him arrive. I thought it well to know my enemy. Master Lackwit was of middle years and fashionably pale. He was also a mile high and bony as a herring, with gooseberry eyes, chin like a hatchet, and tufts of orange hair sprouting from his head, his ears, and his nose. And all his ugliness came wrapped in glorious robes of samite and ermine that fell to big red leather boots. It put me in mind of the time I put my mother's velvet cap and veil on Perkins Granny's rooster. Hanging on to the arm of Rhys from the stables, for the yard was slippery with rain and horse droppings and chicken dung, he greeted us.
Good fortune to you, my lord, and to you, Lady Iceland. I am honoured to visit your modest manor and meet the maiden.
I thought first he spoke in some foreign tongue or a cipher designed to conceal a secret message, but it seems only that his nose was plugged. And it stayed plugged throughout his entire visit, while he breathed and chewed and chattered through his open mouth. Corpus bones, he troubled my stomach no little bit, and I determined to rid us of him this very day. I rubbed my nose until it shone red, blacked out my front teeth with soot, and dressed my hair with the mouse bones I found under the rushes in the hall. All through dinner, while he talked of his warehouses stuffed with greasy wool and the pleasures of the annual Yarmouth herring fair, I smiled my gap-toothed smile at him and wiggled my ears. My father's crack still rings my head, but Master Lackwit left without a betrothal. 27th day of September. Being imprisoned in the solar was none so bad this day, for I heard welcome gossip. My Uncle George is coming home. Near 20 years ago, he went crusading with Prince Edward. Edward came home to be king, but George stayed, finding other lords to serve. My mother says he is brave and honourable. My father says he is woolly-witted. Morwena, who was nurse to my mother before me, just sighs and winks at me. Since my Uncle George has had experience with adventures, I am hoping that he can help me escape this life of hemming and mending and fishing for husbands. I would much prefer crusading, swinging my sword at heathens, and sleeping under starry skies on the other end of the world. I told all this to the cages of birds in my chamber, and they listened quite politely. I began to keep birds in order to hear their chirping, but most often now they have to listen to mine. 28th day of September, Michaelmas Eve. Perkins says that in the village of Woodford, near Lincoln, a man has grown a cabbage that looks like the head of St. Peter the Apostle. People are gathering from all over the shire to pray and wonder at it. My mother, of course, will not let me go. I had thought to ask St. Peter to strengthen my eyes, for I know it unattractive to squint as I do, and to make my father forget this marriage business. 29th day of September, Michaelmas, Feast of the Archangel Michael. Last night the villagers lit the Michaelmas bonfires and set two cottages and a haystack afire. Cobb the smith and Beryl, John Atwood's daughter, were in the haystack. They are scorched and sheepish, but unhurt. They are also now betrothed. Today is quarter-rent day. My greedy father is near muzzle-witted with glee from the geese, silver pennies, and wagon-loads of manure our tenants pay him. He guzzles ale and slaps his belly, laughing as he gathers in the rents. I like to sit near the table where William the steward keeps the record and listen to the villagers complain about my father as they pay. I have gotten all my good insults and best swear words that way. Henry Newhouse always pays first, for at 30 acres, his is the largest holding. Then come Thomas Baker, John Swan from the alehouse, Cobb the smith, Walter Mustard, and all the 18 tenants, down to Thomas Cotter and the widow Joan Proud, who hold no land, but pay for their leaky cottages in turnips, onions, and goose grease. Perkin, the goat boy, holds no land either, but pays a goat each year as rent for his grandmother's cottage. For weeks before Michaelmas, Perkin tells everyone in the village, "I will pay him any goat, but not the black one," or "not the grey one." William Stewart, of course, hears and tells my father, and come rent day, my father insists on the black one or the grey one that Perkin did not wish to part with. My father gloats and thinks he is getting the best of Perkin, but Perkin always winks at me as he leaves, and each year the goat my father demands is the weakest or the meanest or the one that eats the laundry off the line or the rushes off the floor. Perkin is the cleverest person I know. 30th day of September. Morwena says when I have done with writing, I must help with the soap making. The bubbling mess stinks worse than the privy in summer. Therefore, I plan to write abundantly. First, I will say more about Perkin. Although he is the goat boy, Perkin is my good friend and heart's brother. He is very thin and goodly looking, with golden hair and blue eyes, just like the king, but is much dirtier than the king, although much cleaner than the other villagers. He is sore afflicted with wind in his bowels, so I regularly make him a tonic of cumin seed and anise to unbind his liver and destroy the wind. It mostly does not work. One of his legs is considerably shorter than the other, so as he walks, he seems to be dancing some graceless dance, with his head bobbing and arms swinging about to keep his balance. Once I tied a bucket on my foot so I could walk like Perkin and we could dance together, but my arms and legs quickly grew tired. Perkin must be tired all the time, but it doesn't make him ill-tempered. He lives with the goats, or his granny, depending on the season, and is mostly wise and kind when he isn't teasing me. It is Perkin who taught me to name the birds, to know the weather from the sky, to spit between my front teeth, to cheat at draughts and not get caught. All the most important things I know. The devil takes sewing and spinning. I am frequently told not to spend so much time with the goat boy, so of course I seek him out whenever I can. Once I came upon him in the field, chewing on a grass, saying some words over and over to himself. "What spell are you casting, witch boy?" I asked. "No spell," said he, "but the Norman and Latin words for apple, which I lately heard and am saying over and over so I do not forget." Perkin likes things like that. He would like to be learned. When he discovers new words, he uses them all together. "This apple, palm, malus is not ripe." Or, "Sometimes goats, chev, capri are smarter than people." Some people have trouble understanding Perkin, but I know always what is in his heart. My hand grows tired, and I am out of ink, and Morwenna is sending me black looks. I fear it is the soap making for me. Am I doomed to spend my days stirring great vats of goose fat when not writing for Edward? I wonder why rubbing your face and hands with black and sandy, evil-smelling soap makes them clean. Why doesn't it just make them black and sandy? There is no more to say. October. First day of October. My father's clerk suffers today from an inflammation of his eyes, caused no doubt by his spying on our serving maids as they wash under their arms at the mill pond. I did not have the mother's milk necessary for an ointment for the eyes, so I used garlic and goose fat left from doctoring Morwenna's boils yesterweek. No matter how he bellowed, it will do him no harm. I can stand no more of lady tasks. Endless mindless sewing, hemming, brewing, doctoring, and counting linen. Why is a lady too gentle to climb a tree or throw stones into the river when it is lady's work to pick maggots from the salt meat? Why must I learn to walk with a lady's tiny steps one day and sweat over great steaming kettles of dung and nettle for remedies the next? Why must the lady of the manor do all the least lovable tasks? I'd rather be the pig boy. Third day of October. There are Jews in our hall tonight. On their way to London, they sought shelter from the rain. My father being away, my mother let them in. She is not afraid of Jews, but the cook and the kitchen boys have all fled to the barn, so no one will have supper tonight. I plan to hide in the shadows of the hall in order to see their horns and tails. Wait until Perkin hears of this. The hour of Vespers later this day. Bones! The Jews have no horns and no tails, just wet clothes and ragged children. They are leaving England by order of the king, who says Jews are hell-born, wicked and dangerous. He must know some others than the scared and scrawny ones who are here this night. I hid in the hall to watch them, hoping to see them talk to the devil or perform evil deeds. But the men just drank and sang and argued and waved their arms about, while the women chattered among themselves, much like Christians. The children mostly snuffled and whined, until one woman with a face like a withered apple gathered them about her. At first she spoke to them in the Jew's tongue, which sounds much like horses talking, but then with a wink in my direction, she changed to English. First she told of an old man named Abraham who actually argued with God and had great adventures in the desert. Then Moses, who I recognized from the Bible but forgot was a Jew. The woman said Moses led the Jews from a land of slavery to freedom, just as they were going to find freedom in Flanders, riding in tall ships with billowing sails, pushed on by the breath of God. Then she told a story about this man who was so stupid that he forgot how to get dressed in the morning. Where was his shirt? Did it go on his legs or his arms? And how did it fasten? Such trouble it was every morning. Finally, he decided to hire the boy next door to come in each day and tell him, "Your shoes are there, and your cloak is here, and your hat goes on your head." The first day the boy comes in, "First," he says to the stupid man, "wash yourself." "That's all very well," says the stupid man. "But where is myself? Where in the world am I? Am I here? Am I here or am I here?" And he looked under the bed and behind the chair and in the street. But it was all in vain, for he never did find himself. As she spoke, the children stopped their snuffling and chanted with her, "Am I here, or am I here?" And then shyly they began to shove each other and giggle, wiping their runny noses on their sleeves and skirts. "Listen to me, my children," said the old woman then. "Do not be like the stupid man. Know where you yourself are." "How?" "By knowing who you are and where you come from. Just as a river by night shines with the reflected light of the moon, so too do you shine with the light of your family, your people, and your God. So you are never far from home, never alone, wherever you go." It was a wonder. She was like a minstrel or a magician spinning stories from her wrinkled mouth. And then she pulled from the sleeves of her gown bread and onions and herring and boiled cabbage, and they ate. One tiny little girl with soft eyes brought me an onion and some bread. Mayhap I wasn't hidden as well as I thought. It smelled like our food, and I was hungry from hearing of the adventures of Moses, so I ate it. I did not die, nor turn into a Jew. I think some stories are true, and some stories are just stories. Fourth day of October. I was unhappy to see the Jews leave this morning, until I got it in my mind to travel with them and have an experience, mayhap even find my own way in the world and never return to old spinning and sewing manner. I wore an old tunic and leggings of Edward's, stuffed my hair into a cap, swaggered and spit, and looked much like a boy, except that I was curiously flat between the legs. I had thought to stuff the leggings with straw, but feared that would make it hard to walk, so I went as I was. I could hear my nurse Morwina calling for me as we left, but she never thought to look at the boy in the wool cap. I walked with them all the way to Wootton-under-Wynwood, hoping to hear more stories, but the old woman was silent. Instead, I told her about my life, and the boredom of sewing and brewing and doctoring, and how I would rather go crusading like Uncle George, or live with the goats like Perkin. Then, stroking my face with her rough hands, she said, "Little bird, in the world to come, you will not be asked, 'Why were you not George?' or 'Why were you not Perkin?' but 'Why were you not Catherine?'" What did that mean? She said no more. So finally, confused and more than a little sad, I left them for the Wootton Harvest Fair. It was not much of a fair, but they did have a ribbon seller, an ale tent, a stilt walker, and a two-headed goat. I had never been so far from home without Morwina. It felt like a bit of an adventure. I examined a wagon with copper-banded barrels, knives, ropes, and needles for sale. I watched two men argue over the value of a cow who just looked tired and puzzled and ready to go home. I saw three small boys stealing mouthfuls of ale from a keg behind the ale tent, laughing and spluttering and pretending to be drunk. Down behind the horse auction was a small stage where a little wooden Noah and his wife danced on strings, while God ordered Noah to build an ark, and Mrs. Noah, pulling angrily at her husband's coat, scolded him about finishing his chores and not expecting her to get on that flimsy boat. Finally, Noah wrestled his wife, grown quite peevish, to the ground, amid shouts of, "Cry mercy, I say," and, "Never, I say nay," until finally they lay in a heap of tangled strings. Then came the grand procession of the animals, two by two, on a painted scroll unwound by the puppeteer and his apprentice, so the animals looked to be crossing the stage, full alive and lively, as Noah called, "Lions come in, and leopards and dogs, barnyard creatures, goats and hogs, chickens, turkeys, all feathered fowl, hairy beasts that bark and that howl." When the ark was loaded, it rode out a silver-gilt rein on a sea of blue-green satin until the dove descended on golden strings to promise land and life to all. It was a glorious spectacle. Even though I could see the puppeteer's apprentice throughout, pulling strings and banging pots and wiping his nose on the curtain. It was then that William's steward, at the fair to purchase barrels, saw me and threatened to pull me by my hair all the way home. Being right hungry, I went with him most willingly, in exchange for his promise to say nothing about my adventure. On our way out, we passed baskets of cocks for the cockfight. Looking as innocent as I was able, I kicked the baskets over and the cocks escaped. Deus, I thought I was Moses leading them to freedom and home to their wives and baby chicks. Instead, they flew at each other with their terrible sharpened claws, shrieking and slashing in a storm of feathers. I had had enough of that fair and was ready to go home. I told my mother and Morwena that I'd spent the day sulking in the dovecot. They believed me. It is something I would do. 5th day of October. The cook's boy told me today of a miller's apprentice in Nottingham who can fart at will. That, I think, is a useful and notable talent. To the devil with spinning. I purposely ate too much dinner and tried to see if I had the talent. I don't. 6th day of October. This being St. Faith's Day, Morwena and I chased the cook out of the kitchen so that we could bake a St. Faith's cake. I passed pieces of it through my mother's ruby ring and have hung the ring from my bedstead. Tonight, St. Faith will send a dream of who my husband will be. I shall be pleased if he is a prince or a knight with golden hair, or a juggler in ruby silk tunic and purple tights, or a wandering minstrel with music in his throat and mischief in his eye. 7th day of October. Dreamed of the miller's farting apprentice. This morning I stomped the cake into the rushes on the floor and threw the ring into the pig yard. I will never marry. 8th day of October. Searched the pig yard for my mother's ring until dark. Have definitely decided not to be a pig boy. 9th day of October. I am well pleased with the events of today and have celebrated with a handful of blackberries and the rest of the pork pie from supper. As I eat, I will recount the day so as to relive the pleasure. This morning, from the window of the solar, I could hear the villagers singing and shouting as they went about building a cottage for Ralph Little Mouse, who lost his in the Michaelmas celebrations. Poor me, I thought, trapped inside again, missing all the merriment. But then my mother, who was looking a little green in her face, curled up on her great bed and pulled the curtains close about her. And Morwena went to the kitchen to argue with the cook about dinner. So down the stairs I went, skidding through the hall and across the yard, down the road to the village, tucking up my skirts and pulling off my shoes as I ran. Already this early they had the framework of the cottage up, and Joan Proud, Marjorie Mustard and Ralph's children were weaving willow sticks through to make the walls. Nearby, in a hollow in the ground, My favourite part of building was beginning, and I jumped right in, mucking about to mix the puddle of mud, straw, cow hair and dung into daub for covering the walls. The slop felt delightful, squishing through my toes. The sun was shining, breezes blowing, the blackberries were ripe. People were singing Hey Nonny Nonny, and There Was a Maiden Good and Fair, and I had muck between my toes. Oh, to be a villager! Then I had my first good idea. I scooped up a handful of muck and flung it in the air, watching it land plop and sloop on the faces, arms and shoulders of my fellow muckers. Handfuls of the grey and stinking stuff came back at me, and I had to fling more, and they had to fling more, until we all looked like plaster saints and not like people at all. Suddenly everything stopped. No singing, no flinging, no weaving of willows. All eyes were on a young man standing in the road, holding the bridle of the most beautiful horse I've ever seen. The young man was beautiful too, with golden hair and golden eyes and a tunic of gold and green velvet. No one spoke, but as I was right curious, I walked up to him. "Good morning, sir. Can I assist you?" I asked, very nicely for me. He stared at me long without speaking, while his forehead furrowed and his mouth grew small as a mouse's turd. Finally he replied, "My God, the stink! Is there no water for washing or scent for covering up in this village?" I said nothing. I didn't think he really wanted an answer. He went on. "Is that ahead the manor of Rollo of Stonebridge?" "What do you want with the Lord Rollo?" I asked. "It be none of your business, maid, but I am inspecting the family with an eye to marrying the daughter Catherine," he replied, taking a piece of scent-drenched linen from his sleeve and holding it to his nose. "Corpus bones," I thought, "to be wedded to this perfumed prig with his mouth in a knot and a frown always on his face." That is when I had my next very good idea. "The Lady Catherine," I repeated, trying to sound like a villager. "Oh, good fortune to you, good sir. Ye sorely will need it." "I will. Is aught amiss with the lady?"
"No, sir. Oh, no. She is a goodly lady, given that her wits are lacking and her back stooped. Mostly she is gentle and quiet when she's not locked up, and the pits on her face are much better now. Truly. Please, sir, never say I suggested the Lady Catherine was lacking. Please, sir." I made then to grab his arm, but he twisted away, leapt onto the back of the beautiful horse, and was off on the road toward the manor. "Bones," I thought, "he's still going on." But as I watched, the beautiful horse with the beautiful young man left the road, made a wide turn in the field, trampling the carefully seeded furrows of Walter Mustard, and tore off away from the manor, away from my father, and thanks be, away from me. All during supper, my father watched the door, finally pondering aloud about the whereabouts of someone named Rolf, which I, of course, did not know. "So this is why I am pleased with today, and pork pie seems not great enough celebration for what I have saved myself from." 10th day of October. Just 3 days to the feast of St. Edward, my brother Edward's saint's day. When Edward was still at home, we celebrated this day each year with feasting and dancing and mock battles in the yard. Now our celebrations include my father's face turning purple, my mother tightening her eyes and her mouth, and the cook swinging his ladle and swearing in Saxon. The cause of all the excitement is this. On this day each year, since Edward went to be a monk, my mother takes wagons full of gifts to his abbey in his honour. My father shouts that we may as well pour his precious stores in the cesspit. One day his angry liver will set him afire, and I will toast bread on him. My mother calls him Pinchfist, a miser. The cook boils and snarls as his bacon and flour and Rhenish wine leave home. But each year my mother stands firm, and the wagons go. This year we send 460 salted white herring, 3 wheels of cheese, a barrel of apples, 4 chickens, 3 ducks, and 87 pigeons, 4 barrels of flour, honey from our bees, 100 gallons of ale, for no one drinks more ale than monks, my father says, 4 iron pots, wooden spoons, and a rat trap for the kitchen, goose fat for the making of everyday candles and soap. Lots of candles and little soap, I wager, seeing that they are monks. 40 pounds of beeswax for candles for the church. A chest of blankets, linens and napkins. Horn combs for those who have hair. Goose quills, down, and a bolt of woven cloth, black. My mother longs to see Edward on this day each year. He is her favourite child. No small wonder. Robert is abominable, and I puzzle that she had any more children after bearing him first. I would have exposed him by the river. Thomas has been gone so long with the king that we hardly know him. I am stubborn, peevish, and as prickly as a thistle. So by default alone, Edward would be her favourite. And mine. 11th day of October. Last night my mother lost the child she carried. The 5th I have seen die without ever having a chance to live. If God intends for me to be her last, I wish he would stop quickening her and then taking the baby away. She mourns so. I don't believe God means to punish my mother, who may not be learned or clever, but is mostly good. I think he is just not paying enough attention. White-faced she lies in her big bed in the solar, while Morwena gives her goblets of garlic and mint and vinegar to cleanse her womb, and soothes her with, "Oh, my poor ladies," and clucking sounds. I must go with the wagons in her place and see Edward tomorrow. More learning to be the lady of the manor, Deus. The road is rough, the weather hot, the monks old and smelly. We leave after breakfast and hope to be well on the way before the sun finds us. 12th day of October. No more sewing and spinning and goose fat for me. Today my life is changed. How it came about is this. We arrived at the abbey soon after dinner, stopping just outside the entry gate at the guest house next the mill. The jouncing cart did my stomach no kindness after jellied eel and potted lamb, so I was most relieved to alight. A tall monk with a big nose greeted us and led us from the guest house through the abbey gate, past kitchens and dormitories and vast storehouses, to the abbot's office behind the chapel. The abbot received us kindly and sent to my mother gentle words and a marvellous small book of saints, their feast days and their great works. Today, it says, is the feast of St. Edwin, the first Christian king of Northumbria, whose head lies at York and body in the abbey at Whitby. I think there are too many words and not enough pictures, But since I read, and my mother does not, I will try to seduce it from her. Brother Anselm, the big-nosed monk, then escorted me to Edward's desk in the writing room. Women are not allowed in ordinarily, but I believe they think me not quite a woman yet. Edward works in paradise. Beyond the garden, near the chapel, is a room as large as our barn and near as cold. Shelves lining the walls hold books and scrolls, some chained down as if they were precious relics or wild beasts. In three rows sit 15 desks, feebly lit by candles, and 15 monks sit curled over them, their noses pressed almost to the desktops. Each monk holds in one hand his pen, and in the other a sharp knife for scratching out mistakes. On the desks are pens and quills of all sizes, pots of ink, black or coloured, powder for drying, and knives for sharpening. Some of the monks copy the words from one page to another. Others add fanciful designs to the first letter and decoration to the page. Still others punch holes in the pages and sew them together between wooden covers. Never have I seen books so beautiful or so plentiful. The monks didn't talk to me much or even listen to me much, but they didn't send me away. I visited Brother William, who was mixing colours, and gave him some good ideas for inks. A rose, the colour of a newborn lamb's nose, and the iridescent green you sometimes see in the film inside a fresh raw egg. He said nothing, only snorted, but I am sure he was grateful for these suggestions. Another monk let me help prepare the vellum for the next day's writing. But I knew the skins came from our sheep, and I was afraid I would recognize one. I have the same feeling when the cook stuffs swans and geese and lambs whole and sets them before us at special feasts. I preferred smoothing and powdering the vellum pages after they looked less like animals, even though the powder got into my hair and my nose and my clothes. Edward's passion is for the letters and the words, which he inscribes lovingly on the softened vellum. But for me, oh, the pictures. The birds and the flowers, the saints and angels rushing up the side of the page, climbing over the capitals and down the margin. The knights riding snails into battle against squirrels and goats. The many faces of the devil as he scampers over the page, tempting the reader away from the holy words. To spend the rest of my life making pictures, instead of mending and weaving, would be heaven indeed. That is where my life changed. I decided to run away to an abbey. This is how I will live, making pictures in the scriptorium. Although I wish the place were livelier. I know it will be difficult, given that I am a girl, but I am also stubborn and clever. The abbey cannot be this one, as much as I would love to be near Edward, for they know me here, and know I am no boy. I must find another, close enough for visits from Perkin, with a writing room, and mayhap an aged abbot, who doesn't see too well. Do brothers see each other naked? Who would know if a new brother were a maid and no brother at all? I must find out. Would Edward tell me? Tomorrow, when I take my leave of him, I will ask. Tonight we sleep at the guest house. It is near enough to the abbey so I can practice being a monk. I wonder what monks do. 13th day of October. Feast of Edward, King and Saint, and my brother Edward's Saint's Day. A big difference between Robert and Edward is how they laugh at me. Robert laughs loudly, showing his big yellow horse teeth, pinching and slapping my cheeks. Edward laughs softly and kindly. But laugh he does, and did. He said with these apples on my chest, I would not fool even the most aged of abbots.
Deus.
Last year they were but walnuts, and I might have gotten away with it. I thought mayhap to join a nunnery instead. But as the chief occupation of nuns is embroidery, it would be like falling from the spit into the cooking fire. I could grow turnips, but I have neither land nor seeds. Be a tumbler, but I do not tumble, except when I am trying not to. A musician, but I do not play. I used to study music, since my mother said a lady must be accomplished, but the noise I made was so awful my father gave my lute to the cook. I could be a travelling spinner, but that is no escape. I am left with a beastly father, a life of chores, no hope, no friends, no escape, and a large bosom. Corpus bones, is there no justice in the world? 14th day of October. Feast of St. Callistus, slave, banker, convict, pope, and martyr. My mother must give me the little book of saints. I am already making use of it to find how saints lived and died, and what lessons I may learn from them. On the way home from the abbey, we stopped at Highgate Manor to bring greetings to the Baron Ranulph's family, who are visiting there until Christmas. Their daughter, Lady Elis, and I were together at Belford long ago, learning high-born manners and the duties of a lady, until my mother lost another of my unborn baby brothers, and in sorrow called me home. What I remember most about Elis is she liked to complain, said yes, my lady, and no, my lord, but did as she pleased when no one could see, and was more fun than anyone else. She has been living of late at the French court. I watched her at supper. She looks to be a lady with her fancy French table manners and her yellow hair, but during the dancing, she grabbed my arm and pulled me from the hall for a gossip. We tucked up our skirts and walked round and round the dark manor yard, arm in arm, talking of who has rotten teeth, and who married someone rich and ugly, and who paints her face and stuffs her bosom. We flirted with the guards, and arranged to meet them later in a chamber, where we will send Elis's old nurse and her sewing woman on some pretext. They will all have a surprise. Elis told me she gets away with things because she looks so docile and innocent, while she does just what she wants. She says she would like to be a horse trainer, but knows she was brought home to wed. It appears that we are both in grave danger of being sold like pigs at autumn fair. We pledge to meet in 7 days' time at the High Meadow, it being but half a day's walk for each of us. Since I left Belford, I have not been much with other girls, and I long to tell her of my life and thoughts and wonderings, and hear hers. 15th day of October. Feast of St. Euthymius the Younger, who lived 3 years on nuts and herbs. Home again. While hiding from Morwena before supper, I watched the geese returning from the pasture to their shed in the yard, all in a line, like plump little knights in feathers. I think I love geese more than any other birds, because no one else does. They are not small and delicate like larks and sparrows, or swift and clever like hawks and falcons. They do not sing like nightingales, and cannot be trained to talk or dance or do tricks. They are cunning, greedy, short-sighted, and stubborn. Much like me, now that I think on it. I have seen swans on the river. They are much more beautiful and stately than geese, but a little vain and not as smart. I think my mother is like a swan. My brother Robert is a rooster, strutting here and there, crowing about himself. Edward is a heron, with his long nose and long legs. Clever Perkin is a falcon. And my nurse Morwena is a nuthatch, busy and brown and dumpy. My father, of course, is a buzzard, slow and stupid, the devil take him. I think perhaps Elis is a dove on the outside and a hawk within. And I am a plain grey and brown goose. 16th day of October, 1918.